The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Google. What makes them industry giants? Get ready to take a peek inside and learn their secrets of success. This is Silicon Valley Insider, the show that demystifies the Valley and helps to elevate your business to the next level. Now, your hosts for Silicon Valley Insider, Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler.
Welcome to Silicon Valley Insider. I'm your host, Keith Koo. And I'm joined today by two very special guests, Alex Darafshan and Patrick Choi. Alex is well known in the Valley for being a technologist. Most recently, he was one of the Microsoft Azure cloud evangelists, working a lot on IoT. He has an extensive background in healthcare, building private clouds, public clouds, and hybrid clouds. So very happy to have Alex with us today. Also, we have Patrick Choi, who is the divisional CISO, or Chief Information Security Officer, for a major defense contractor. Today's show is going to be a follow-up from last week, Chipocalypse Now. We're going to talk about some of the fallout from Chipocalypse and things that people and companies should be doing to stay healthy, in other words, good hygiene. We'll also be talking a little bit about a big event from last week, the Consumer Electronics Show, or CES. And I also want to wish Jonathan, my co-host, well as he's on business today. So, last week, we talked about Chipocalypse, which is the meltdown inspector flaws that was found lying dormant in all modern-day computers. And at the time, it was said that one is an Intel flaw, while the other ones may or may not be, but it does affect all these different computer systems, whether it was a cell phone, a mobile phone, PCs, servers, or laptops. Subsequently, AMD, which is a rival to Intel, they've also admitted that they too are equally susceptible to these same flaws. And the messaging there is that it's a hardware-based flaw, which means that when we think about a computer, there's hardware and software running it. Last week, we had the CTO of Neutron, Nir Geist, with us. He had explained in depth that hardware and software work together. And in the past, there was an assumption in the IT industry that hardware would be safe at the chip level. Even when we talk about vendor risk or third-party risk, we often talk about how at least the microcode in a chip or the chip itself is safe, and now we're finding that it's not. So we'll talk more about that later on in today's show. Some other security news that people should be aware of is that Intel also announced a vulnerability in their AMT technology, which is active management technology. This is embedded in the brains of your computer and in the BIOS of the system itself. And what they've disclosed is that there's a default user, a default password that vendors like HP, Dell, Acer, Asus, people who make computers, have the option of whether keeping it default or not. I can't go through all the different computer systems and let you know which ones are and are not. Just be aware that as we talk again later on today, it's never good to have a default username or password on any of your hardware or software solutions. Also, big company EMC, which was acquired by Dell, they and their subsidiary VMware, they also disclosed that in their system, so really for enterprise customers, if you're running EMC and a VMware environment, they disclosed that they're susceptible for all their cloud deployments and virtual machines, that your data could also be vulnerable to breaches or attacks. So these are just things that people should really be aware of. Alex and Patrick, thanks again for joining us on today's show. Alex, you were recently at the Consumer Electronics Show. What were the latest trends that were discussed?
Yeah, really, connected cars, smart cars were everywhere. There was a discussion of connecting smart cars, electric vehicles. Voice assistant and Alexa was almost everywhere, from refrigerators to vacuum cleaners to smart glasses, AR and VR. And again, just like past few shows, drones and robots were a highlight of it. And I see that, you know, robots are becoming more mature and more interactive. And again, it is due to really voice interaction and AI development.
So thanks, Alex. I had heard that this year's Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, and by now I'm sure almost everyone's heard about it, it was the largest ever attended. It was close to 250,000 people who just invaded Las Vegas, as well as over 30% of all the companies that presented were Chinese companies with different types of IoT and autonomous driving, autonomous cars, connected home. But the criticism I heard about to this year's show was that there was nothing really new. There was nothing really innovative or new that people could really say, wow, that was a completely new technology. It was more about the same. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think what the theme, different theme I saw this time, a lot of the stuff was that hype and futuristic. They look a lot more real and they are getting into a consumer's hand versus 2 or 3 years ago when we talked about Alexa, it wasn't real. People had a lot of doubts because of the lack of skills that they can have a useful kind of need for, out of them. And even with the connected cars and smart cars, it was really a lot futuristic. The only car company out there was Tesla, which Tesla wasn't even present. There were 7 or 8 companies like Byton and Toyota's concept cars and a couple of newer companies that we have never heard about them. So that was that really, you know, what was different. A lot of stuff that was futuristic was becoming more real.
So Alexa, which is an Amazon technology akin to Siri, I had heard that Alexa was really taking off this year at the show. What are the implications for, as you mentioned, Tesla being in the past the dominant car company? Now we have Toyota, we have Ford, we have all these other companies, car companies in a way catching up. What are they doing to integrate something like Alexa into their vehicles?
Yeah, today when you're driving, you still have a lot of manual intervention to look for an address or put for look for a service, maybe a restaurant or whatever. But Alexa is so tightly integrated with the cars, we can actually, without interacting with any knob or any screen, you can ask the same way that you ask from Alexa at home, where is the best restaurant? Where is the less congested route? Any of these questions you have while you're driving, whether we want to look for a service or for a map, it makes it a lot easier and effective.
And with that, so you have Alexa, you're driving your car, you're asking for a restaurant or a map. How does that enhance your personal profile? How does that actually also integrate with what you're doing with Alexa at home?
Yeah, a good example is that you are driving home. Your wife can actually ask, so when my husband will be home? And that's how connected that ecosystem it is. Or you can tell that, you know, I'm going to be home at 10 o'clock. Don't wait for me for dinner. You don't have to actually make a phone call or anything. Since you're part of that connected ecosystem, it can send that alert and notification to your family. Or if you're running late on your way to a meeting, it can actually reroute you and inform all the participants out of your calendar that you're running late and connect you automatically to your meeting vis-a-vis Skype or WebEx without actually doing anything.
Yeah, that's great. And then I think when I think about all these connected services, especially with my own home or my own business, I'm wondering, and Patrick, we'll save this for when we come back, what are the security ramifications of having all those connected devices? What am I thinking of or what's happening in how do I keep myself safe, which is a large part of what we're going to talk about in today's show with all these emerging technologies, all this rush to adopt them. We have CES. How do we actually keep ourselves as safe as possible? So back to what's happening in the news. Chipocalypse is a big deal. It's not going away. We're looking at it as a 2 to 7 year fix because it requires the vendors, the chip manufacturers, to change their architecture. We're actually going to stand up a website, chipocalypse.com. You can go to svin.biz. to get more information on that. And that's going to be a landing site for this next generation of vulnerabilities because really as much as people are going to be doing stuff to stay ahead of that security curve, there'll be more and more exploits. So thanks again for tuning in with us today on Silicon Valley Insider. I have Alex Derafshan and Patrick Choi as guests. If you want to reach us, please send us an email at info@svin.biz. Or call us at 1-888-828-7846 or on our website, svin.biz. That's svin.biz. We'll be right back.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-828-7846. That's 888-828-SVIN. Now, back to Silicon Valley Insider. Once again, your hosts, Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler.
Welcome back to Silicon Valley Insider. On today's show, we have two guests, Alex Derafshan, a cloud architect, cloud evangelist, and expert on IoT, Internet of Things. And we're also joined with Patrick Choi, who is the divisional CIO at a major defense contractor. Earlier in the show, we were following up on the Chipocalypse, which is the chip flaw that exists in all modern-day computers. We talked about it a lot last week with the CTO of Neutron, Nir Geist, and we have gotten a lot of inquiries on Neutron. So come to our website, svin.biz, where you can find out more about Neutron and their solution. And just as a reminder, they do not yet have a consumer product, but they are in discussions about putting one in because there was a lot of interest in what they're doing. So in the last segment, Alex, you were talking about overall trends at the Consumer Electronics Show last week. Weren't they talking about 5G a little bit?
Yeah, so it seemed that because of the Wi-Fi's insecurity and lack of availability, 5G networks, which would deliver about 100 gig type of, you know, and the upper bands of the 100 gig kind of bandwidth. And a lot of companies are building now 5G capabilities into their laptops, because that not only makes the connectivity available everywhere, also, you know, removes a lot of Wi-Fi's and security in the public networks.
So that's a good point. And can you go more into, because you're much more technical than I am, on 5G, what's the ramifications for people who have traditional wireline or wireless infrastructures in their company?
So it definitely, it will remove that barrier, because now you can get connected anywhere you are with a higher bandwidth. And we know that VPN is the way of connectivity. A lot of companies will provide VPN connectivity at their offices for their users to begin with. But then this way, also home users don't need to worry about, oh, I need to be off Comcast or my hotspot. Then they can have widely available 5G connectivity with the VPN, so they can have securely connect to any services they want. And connected cars are driving the 5G requirement, because they create about 100 gigabyte a minute of data, and that has to be sent to the cloud to be analyzed, and that is really a big driver of all this 5G evolution.
Yeah, so that is very impressive, the amount of bandwidth that can be pushed through 5G. Patrick, in your role as the Divisional CISO, Chief Information Security Officer, given all the news, all the negative news around cyber risk, data breaches, and now especially this hardware vulnerability or Chipocalypse, which in itself inherently won't be fixed for a number of years, what are you and folks, your peers, thinking about with all these types of risk?
So if you look at the 5G as the evolution of the 4G LTE, the max really talking about is about the amount of data going to an endpoint. So actually, some of these newer laptops, they have LTE connections already. So you got to be concerned about what the patching is on these systems, what the actual vulnerabilities in these systems. Now, if you have abundance of data going in and out of that system, you really want to make sure your endpoints, so mobile and laptop, are now similar security stance. You want to make sure that the device, like an Apple phone, you want to make sure those iOS has to be updated. If you have an unsupported phone, you're kind of at a risk, because if you get an old, maybe for iPhone 4, it's not supported anymore, that is actually vulnerable. So, and then you move over to an Android device, there's multiple versions of the Android device. The only key that of that is that Android has multiple versions per brand of the phone. So you really have to chase your cellular to get those updates, to actually make sure you get those hygiene corrected.
Yeah, back to what we were talking about in the last segment of the show and in previous shows, especially last week, patching is really important. Patching is when your vendor, so normally a Microsoft or Mac iOS, Apple iOS, puts out a release that will close a vulnerability, we're pretty used to that. What we found, and it would be good to get Alex or your opinion, Patrick, is that last week what happened when AMD was coming to, you know, AMD saying that they too were just as vulnerable, there was a patch that came out from Microsoft, and it not just had the blue screen of death for AMD-based computers, but in some cases was not bootable. And so we talked about with Nir last week that sometimes the cure is worse than the ailment itself, right? Because there wasn't enough time necessarily between Microsoft and their supplier like AMD. And why I'm saying this is that back to what we've talked about time and time again, vendor risk or third-party risk, even Microsoft relies on a company like AMD or Intel to push their patches so that they can build on top of them. And if they're not tested correctly, then it can cause downstream problems. And this is happening a lot quicker. So what are both of your thoughts on that?
This is interesting. In the old days, we used to worry about just patching our computer. But now this patching process, securing devices, is extends to our phones, our tablets, our IoT devices. I have at home a Ring that, you know, I get in. I have to make sure that is patched. There's a vulnerability. I have security cameras at home. They need to be patched. I have smoke detectors. I mean, just a list goes on. And now we get into whole connected cars are the same way. We really need to start building a list of the security activities for our day-to-day life that we can make sure these devices are secure. One good example, what you brought up, that when Microsoft patched AMD and people lost their data, this is an old practice. You cannot rely on the vendors. You should do an ongoing backup of your data, if not daily, at least once a week. If something goes wrong at this, you have a backup, you can continue. And there is a sort of security hygiene that, you know, Patrick probably can allude to it.
That's correct. And so inside an IT enterprise, you have to test the patches. So there's actually programs you work with Microsoft, Oracle, or some of the larger vendors to have these patches tested in your environment before they actually go before Patch Tuesday. So probably within 2 weeks, you want to test it in an UAT environment, similar to like an SDLC, where you want to test it into a production environment, similar, and make sure all your software is compatible. Now, there are some critical updates that cannot even go through that, and it says, okay, you have to do. So that's where Alex is saying that we need to take a risk on that. And that's where it comes to other vulnerabilities and other malware that actually takes precedence. So we have to get into a backup scenario where maybe your endpoints, and not just your data center, your endpoints should be backed up as well, because they're just as critical nowadays. You know, yes, you do your data center cloud, but on a local level, there are files in there that might be critical to your employees. So there are software these days that actually connects to these systems, these laptops, these endpoints, and it backs up to the cloud. So and on demand, you can restore them. So it's important that we have to recognize that patching is similar to a vulnerability. We have to have a backup plan.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Patrick. You're mentioning that in large enterprises, you have user acceptance testing, you have software development lifecycle, where these enterprises spend lots and lots of money on their infrastructure, the critical infrastructure, making sure that data is backed up. And now we're talking about those same types of practices are available to consumers and small businesses. They just have to really understand what it takes to do that. An interesting comment at one of my contacts was talking about is we rely for consumers, right? You hear about something like a Geek Squad or similar type of at-home delivery in service to fix your computers. And it's really interesting how people put their trust in these companies. And now with this new hardware vulnerability, that might not be so safe. And we'll talk about that when we get back a little bit more. So again, I'm joined by Patrick Choi, Divisional CISO of a major defense contractor, and Alex Darafshan, technologist and cloud architect. And today's show, we're talking about following up on the Chipocalypse. So get a hold of us at info@svin.biz or call us at 888-828-7846, and we'll be right back. Thanks.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-828-7846. That's 888-828-SVIN. Now, back to Silicon Valley Insider. Once again, your hosts, Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler.
Welcome back to Silicon Valley Insider. I'm your host, Keith Koo, and I'm joined today with special guest Patrick Choi, divisional CISO at a major defense contractor, and Alex Derafshan, technologist and former Azure Cloud Evangelist. So thanks again for joining me. In our last two segments, we were talking today about the follow-up from the Chipocalypse or the Meltdown and Spectre flaws. We did a little bit on some of the trends coming out of the Consumer Electronics Show last week in Las Vegas and what are the security implications. I really liked what we were discussing just before the break. We got into some of the things that enterprises, small businesses, and consumers should be thinking about in terms of keeping themselves safe or, in essence, good hygiene. We had just gotten into something that a friend asked me about, which is with the hardware vulnerability, Chipocalypse, it's inherently exists in almost every modern-day computer at the chip level, which means that in the past, we used to think that the chip was safe, that nothing could really get into your brain. But this is kind of like a concussion or a disease that's infecting your brain. You really have to treat that. And so I had a question about, well, we put our trust as a consumer in something like a Geek Squad. And now with this type of vulnerability in Meltdown and Spectre, these vulnerabilities were people, hackers, if they had direct access to your computer for Spectre, they could actually pull out privileged information like passwords, bank account information as it's happening on your computer. Or through Meltdown, this view that if an application was vulnerable in one virtual machine, it could be vulnerable in other applications running your machine and you would never know it. So is that in effect true?
Yes, that's exactly. So in an enterprise, we are concerned about the multi-tenant environments. Those are the key areas where your data can possibly leak through Meltdown. And what will some of these cloud apps are providing tools that you can actually check your partitions, and they will help. See, almost you do your assurance on your own, on your partitions, while the cloud vendors are providing the technical updates.
Yeah, I had heard or I had actually read the releases by Amazon, Google Cloud, and Microsoft Azure that they all had remediated their flaws. And I think one thing to keep in mind is no matter what people have done, there has been about a 30% degradation in performance because in order to patch the as much as people could on the inherent flaw of the chip, it required shutting down what we call that speculation algorithm, what chip manufacturers were using to speed up their computers. So as an industry, it dropped your performance by 30%. And that's one aspect of it that's bad because you invest in computers to be fast so you can do fast calculations. But the other aspect of it is back to not being able to close this vulnerability. If you're a cloud vendor and you've done that, what's the potential that you're in a multi-tenant environment, which means that you have one company or several companies in the same cloud environment, what's the potential that one of them has a breach and can affect the other one?
Yeah, so if any of the host that application is running was vulnerable and somebody hacked into it, now they can from there on, because a host and cloud can have multiple VMs, and VMs can belong to different companies, not just one company. So by breaking into that hardware and server, now they can actually break into a bunch of companies' VMs and then eventually, have access to their data and applications across the board in the cloud.
Yeah, this is a very good point you made, Alex. So in previous shows, we did one called Is Moving to the Cloud Safer? And there's an assumption by most people who hear cloud, especially executives or small businesses, that moving to the cloud is cheaper in terms of operating costs, and that can be true. But what we find with a lot of the breaches that we've heard about recently, whether it's DJI, the drone company, or even Uber, you could get cost savings by moving to the cloud. In fact, we encourage people to move to the cloud, but if you don't know your own environment, if you don't know what security protocols you need to adopt, even we talked about the number one cyber risk consulting firm in the world, Deloitte, they were susceptible to themselves not following their own good cloud hygiene. So when these largest companies sometimes don't get it right, Uber, Apple, DJI. How are small businesses going to cope with that?
Yeah, this is nothing new in a security model. Actually, in cloud, what we talk about shared responsibility. There are things that, you know, your vendor will do, protecting the hardware, network, but the rest of, as we move the application operating system, it is really the application owner's responsibility. In old days when I ran the IT, it was the same way. I supported the data center and applications, but after operating system, it was application owner's job to make sure their code is safe, they have the timely patches for their applications to be secure. So we need to definitely go back to those best practices in security. Just because you're in cloud, that doesn't mean you're safe. Still, you need to apply the old rules. Make sure your data is encrypted. Make sure your passwords are safe. Make sure you have complex passwords. People cannot guess them. As well as using VPN and encrypted connectivity for your applications and devices. So that's just to be applied across the board, whether you're at home for your own computing, you're in a company, or your applications in the cloud, you have to apply those best practices all the time.
That's right.
Thank you. Patrick, go ahead.
So, yeah, back to the point of shared services, shared responsibility. So there's, and you mentioned the Amazon, right? That could be both a service in cloud as well as infrastructure in cloud. So you really have to define to and make sure your delineation is clear that, for instance, infrastructure in the cloud, that means your guest OS, you are responsible for the patches to that. So you can call Amazon and they set their patch, but your level has to be done at the OS. So the hypervisor might be taken and cleared, but your side is not. So make sure you do the hygiene there. And then if it's a application on the cloud, then yeah, their layers are up there, and Amazon will need to make sure they clear all the layers in the cloud. Yeah. So you have to define that.
No, that's an excellent point you make, Patrick, that even though Amazon, Microsoft Azure, Google Cloud, Alibaba Cloud, all these different cloud providers have said that they've done remediation steps to protect from these inherent flaws for the time being, and that's just until another exploit comes, you, as the system owner, have to be also patching your virtual machines and instances. I heard that Docker is one of the most vulnerable, and I know that Docker is used everywhere, container technology. And why I'm saying that is all three of us come from very large, sophisticated enterprise experience. We've worked for very large technology companies. And as we've done this show, we've realized that consumers and small businesses really need that kind of help. And that's why we've developed partnerships with companies that can really serve this segment, just because we know that if enterprises have a hard time dealing with this onslaught of vulnerabilities, we think that small businesses and consumers are completely unaware of what's at risk. So really, more ideas on what these businesses and consumers should be doing for hygiene is really appreciated. What more could people be doing to help themselves?
So it's actually going back, one more thing before we move to this, is that when we contract with a big cloud service, sometimes they have actually subcontractors. Those subcontractors are related to a product that you purchase from them or you rent. And those subcontractors might or might not be in play. But so what you have to do is go back to your contract and say, hey, I am leasing your services or I'm using your software. Make sure your subcontractors are as well as patched. So be aware of your contracts you have and be aware of all the flow downs that are there to support your security hygiene.
Yeah, in organizations, regulated industries such as financial services and banking, we talk about how vendor risk or third-party risk is regulated, and subcontractors is also known as fourth-party risk. So I'm using an Indian outsourcing firm, I'm using a vendor, and even in the case we brought up with the AMD patch, Microsoft's patch on an AMD chip, that is fourth-party risk. The chip manufacturer that Microsoft is supporting, they have to make sure that they too have tested their patches. And in banking even, sometimes banks kind of, they shouldn't, but if there's going to be an area where they conceivably, quote unquote, would cut a corner, This is the area, because they just don't understand it. And more industries, and Alex, I know you came out of healthcare as well, more and more industries that are not as regulated as banks, because of data breaches and data privacy, they will have to step up. We know that regulations will improve or get strengthened in order to make sure all that happens. Patrick, you work for a defense contractor, so you know this. In order for you to fulfill your obligation to the government, they absolutely want to make sure that you're taking all these precautions.
Mm-hmm.
So what more do you think then, back to small businesses and consumers, what are some practical steps? We had talked about encryption. We had talked about data backups. Big companies have those investments. What should small companies and consumers be doing?
Yeah, so some of the things would be password management. Nowadays it's about cracking passwords, right? So the length of it makes sense and some complexity. So before it was 8 characters, a standard, that's not the standard anymore. So I would suggest something more 10 or 12 characters with some special characters in there. Definitely do not use the same passwords, your personal account, as your enterprise account. Keep those separate. And then if you are touching critical data, sensitive data, and is available to use multi-factor, definitely use the multi-factor. But that will give you the full identity. So when there's a malware or something trying to steal your system data or credentials, that's one way to prevent it.
And multi-factor authentication is like having a password and getting a text to my cell phone or getting some other string to my email, something like that, right?
That's correct, yeah. Yep. There's phone apps like Google Authenticator. That's very useful.
Okay.
Yeah, Google, Microsoft has it. So to follow up to that, try to avoid using your dog's name, cat's name, ex-wife's name, because those are not really secure. As we are prevalent in social networks, people know who our pets are. They know who we dated, when we called the timeline 20 years ago, and they use all those names to begin with. So yeah. Avoid it.
Well, thanks, guys, for these hygiene tips. So when we get back, we'll be talking more about what companies can be doing in a proactive fashion and what people should be doing in a proactive fashion to keep themselves safe. You've been listening to Silicon Valley Insider. Please get a hold of us at info@svin.biz. Thanks.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-828-7846. That's 888-828-SVIN. Now, back to Silicon Valley Insider. Once again, your hosts, Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler.
Welcome back to Silicon Valley Insider with your host, Keith Koo. Today, I'm joined with special guests Patrick Choi, Divisional CISO at a major defense contractor, and Alex Zarafshan, technologist and cloud evangelist. Today's show, we've been talking about a few topics. One was what happened at the Consumer Electronics Show last week, some of the new trends. We'll definitely be doing a more in-depth show later on. Also, we've been talking about the follow-up from the Chipocalypse, which was the Meltdown and Spectre flaws. There's more hardware vulnerabilities that are coming out as well. AMD, the chip manufacturer, said that they are equally as vulnerable as Intel. And so then we spent a lot of time today talking about what good hygiene practices are for both enterprises as well as individuals. So one of the things we're doing, because Guardian Insight Group, as a consulting firm, we serve large enterprises. We've come out of large enterprises, but we see the value and the need to give these same types of tools and services to consumers. We're going to start up a website called chipocalypse.com. And you can come to that site through svin.biz if you don't know how to spell chipocalypse. And that's going to be a landing page, because this is the type of vulnerability that's not going away. It's a hardware-based vulnerability, which means that it's going to take at least 2 to 7 years for the chip manufacturers to re-architect all their designs in how they make chips in order to make sure this flaw doesn't come back. And whenever a flaw gets put out like this, so this was an academic exercise where researchers from Google, the University of Graz, and other researchers actively tried to crack this hardware. Once it gets out there, it's a race against the clock for nefarious people, hackers around the world, to try to exploit these flaws. Earlier in the show, Patrick and Alex both mentioned how patching is a good, what I'll call first line of defense, where the manufacturer puts out a quote-unquote fix, and normally you apply the fix and it shuts down that particular vulnerability, back to a hardware-based vulnerability, and that's why I keep harping on it and why it's not going away for a number of years. The attackers will just keep trying to exploit that hardware vulnerability, and the vendors, their subcontractors, as Patrick mentioned, so the vendors' vendors, they all have to keep working in lockstep, trying to race against the clock to keep themselves safe. Patrick and Alex, what are other things people should be thinking about?
So on the just the PC hygiene, you really have to chase down the manufacturer for those firmware updates. We've been seeing that there's a delay in that process. Even though the vulnerability came out a while ago through Google Project, there's just too many different laptops and desktops out there and computers that really dependent on the brand to actually get those firmwares out. And firmware development is not easy, and you got to say, right? So if they don't have the firmware update, I would suggest make sure you have a roadmap to get new hardware in eventually. But today, definitely make sure your software side, the software layer, the OS side, is supported and has the proper patching done. And I would suggest keep chasing those firmware because eventually they will come, or they're not. But the ones that will come, make sure you have also the software on top that's patched.
Yeah, to follow up, you cannot put your hope in the vendor, because we have seen in all these vulnerabilities, they have actually happened 6, 7 months, a year earlier, and vendors have been quiet about it and they're trying to fix it. And once they think they have a fix, that's where they kind of, you know, open up the to the public. But since we cannot really wait for them to fix it, we should really stay vigilant about practicing, you know, password, encrypting our hard disk, backing up our data, and making sure that, you know, we don't expose ourselves. This is ironic. I buy a security product during the holidays that I'm installing. I read the fine print that they say they take no responsibility for security of a security device that I bought. So this is the level of commitment vendors have to secure their product, but you really need to take active role and personal ownership of it.
Yes, exactly. We've all come from very large companies, and we love those companies. And those companies, you know, often we're told no one's ever gotten fired at enterprise level for investing in a Microsoft or investing in a Cisco or investing in an IBM. And they're good companies, but back to the exponential rate of vulnerabilities and attacks, when something comes out, like an Intel or an AMD flaw, that affects their entire architecture and design, they have to go through a process to validate everything they're doing is going to work, and sometimes it doesn't work. They're also going through an army of lawyers and their boards of directors to make sure that anything they do doesn't drop their stock price in a significant fashion, because they have to disclose that. And so that's why it's so important for individuals, consumers, small businesses, and enterprises to do what we just said. Take the matter into your own hands. Be proactive with what you can do. Don't just wait around for what the vendor is going to do for you, because sometimes it's going to be too late. And that's really where, if you need help, come to our landing page, svin.biz, or our new site that's coming up to help with the vulnerability aspect, chipocalypse.com, so that you can get some tips and helps. And, you know, we'll have links to partners that can really help you with this problem. You just can't rely on your vendor, and you can't rely on yourself unless you really know what you need to do. So once again, today I've been joined by Patrick Choi and Alex Darafshan. We've been following up on practical things you can do to keep yourself in good hygiene and best practices now that there's more and more of these vulnerabilities at risk. If you need more information, contact us at or email us at info@svin.biz. Come to our site, svin.biz, or call us at 888-828-7846. Once again, thanks for joining us on today's show. And Jonathan will be back next week. Thank you.
You've been listening to Silicon Valley Insider with Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler. For questions or comments on today's program, or to schedule a complimentary consultation with Keith or Jonathan about your business, call 1-888-828-SVIN. That's 1-888-828-7846. 888-828-SVIN. Be sure to listen again.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.